We're talking about good night, good luck. Present are
Richard,
Jane,
Terry,
Mira,
Mary,
Steve,
Nancy,
George,
Rosal,
Helen,
and Mark.
Boy, and we've all seen the film.
We've all seen both films?
No, I missed Cody, but yes, we've all seen this film.
Okay, well that's very good.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? I spoke about this film with my mother this morning. Because she took herself out by herself to see it in the movie house. She couldn't wait. Mm-hmm. And her things were, she thought it was amazing. He never stopped smoking, did he? And
yeah.
Everyone smoked, and he smoked most. But then she said, and then she smoked then.
Same
she
as
can
Cody,
tell you the date when she stopped smoking. And it was after he died. But
he died of lung cancer.
Yeah, he
died of lung cancer. I sort of thought that would be in the credits, but
no, he died of lung cancer. But anyway, the other thing she said, that guy, that other reporter, whoever he was, who committed suicide, who was he? I never heard of him. So was that an actual character? Was that
it's all real?
I thought so. I said, he must have been local to New York,
and he wasn't. Even said that.
I don't remember his name.
In some market.
Mm-hmm.
So they showed the New York one where he came on afterwards and said, "I'm proud to work at the same network."
Mm-hmm.
He was the local news person.
Yeah, and I don't remember.
I don't remember him either. I'm from New York. Are you? Yeah.
No, I didn't live in New York then. No.
I did.
I lived in LA then.
But maybe I don't know. Maybe I was too young though. This was when
56.
The film took place in
1953
or 56 or 7, right?
Yeah, that had been 56, because that's when those big broadcasts were, but yeah.
Right.
And then the couple, who weren't supposed to know.
They were on NPR.
Yeah, I didn't get to hear them yet. I'll have to point her at that NPR. But she didn't remember them at all, and she couldn't remember their names, and even though it went by too fast for her to hear the names, you know, because she's got some hearing loss, when they weren't familiar names. But yeah, I thought all of that was amazing. I thought the kind of film noir
ambience, the jazzy singer and the whole
thing. That part was great.
Right?
It was very evocative.
Yeah,
do you think this movie had more of an appeal to people like your
retro
older generation? Because there was a couple in front of us at the movie theater who, well, the man just plotted and bravoed the whole thing at the end.
Well, certainly, if you were around, he plotted and said bravo.
And what demographic was he? My parents' age.
At least 50s or 60s.
Yeah,
60s. Yeah. And certainly, if you had anybody in your family, or you were blacklisted in any way, and many people were, of course you would applaud, because seeing McCarthy brought down a notch or many notches would be very personal to you. And you know, the blacklist affected thousands and thousands
of people. It wasn't just
that. They talk about the Hollywood 10, and they talk about
Just did a whole thing about Hollywood blacklist, and it's still going on. They're still showing some things at Yerba Buena and like Wednesday nights or something.
But you know, this brings up a good question, because if you didn't know about this particular era in history, and like I came in with a lot of prejudices because I was really fascinated by that era. It sort of politicized me at some point. I don't know how, but my earliest memories of political knowledge were as a result of this.
Okay.
And so, but what if you weren't, and so I've done a lot of reading and stuff like that, what if you weren't familiar with this? Like, suppose you came in cold as a kind of a, you know, something you were curious about, like you never knew about it before. Do you think this movie presented a, did this movie give a good overview? Did you learn a lot?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't educate you too much.
No, it didn't educate
you. So would you be lost if you didn't know?
No.
I mean, would you?
No.
Well, we have people in the group of different ages, so we can.
Well, not that many different ages. The range is pretty narrow.
Yeah, we're not as wide as we could be.
Right. I mean, I'm not the oldest, but I remember the Army McCarthy hearings on television.
On television.
Yes, I remember the Army McCarthy. That was
the only time he turned on during the day.
The Army McCarthy hearings were Joe McCarthy against the Army. Remember, the Army
was there.
Right.
Come out against the film. Yeah.
Well, you remember hearing that in what year?
56, 57.
No,
you were a baby.
No,
Nancy, you were a baby.
I was in a highly political household.
Yeah.
And we had early television, so television was already familiar as a source of news. There were people, though, who went out and bought televisions when those were going to be televised.
Absolutely. And they would stand in front of appliance stores and watch it.
Absolutely.
Happened. The country was riveted. It's really the first TV event that happened, other than people just getting together to watch any old thing on TV, Hilton Burrow and a dress.
Do you remember watching it?
And Ernie Kovacs.
Yes, and Ernie Kovacs. But it was the first thing that galvanized the country live. And they were
not on radio, but on television.
On television was Aaron McCarthy hearings. Mm-hmm. And I remember it. I think my grandmother watched it.
What he has to say.
I would say
about.
It was 54, because I recall, now here's a memory, and my mother will confirm it. I'll make her listen to this, and she can decide whether my memory is correct, or I've conflated two things. I remember watching the Army McCarthy hearings in a particular house in the basement, while my father, well, you have to say then, God bless him, right, when you're going to say something that's not very complimentary about somebody, then you say, was struggling to put together the tricycle for my little brother. And so that was December of
50. Yeah, she's down,
you know, something. 55, 56, maybe December 56.
It was in the film.
But did you know what it was about?
No, but I just knew that my father could not stay concentrated on his task because he kept doing this.
That's what I knew. I didn't not know what it was about, except I'm from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're our senator.
Our senator.
The junior senator from Wisconsin.
I think it reverberated in Wisconsin in a real different way. You know, I didn't know the whole world knew about Joseph.
Well, but I was from Minnesota. My family's from Minnesota, so,
similar.
Well, I thought what Merle had to say about television at that, when he was speaking at the podium at the beginning and the end of the film, was really profound, even today. I mean,
absolutely.
God, that's
not thinking to any audience. There were a lot of younger people in the audience when I saw it.
You don't need to say shit.
But I thought that too. Is there enough background for them to really know?
I agree with George that what he was saying was profound, and I thought that was really a nice touch to the movie. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminds me of one of Eisenhower's last speeches, where he talks about the military-industrial complex and the profit motive of war, and had that kind of where it kind of has that warning kind of, if you don't watch out, this you know, this might come to pass kind of thing, and really profound. And so I thought that was good that film had that, and I thought that might have been one of the reasons why the film was made, because he made so profound statements like that have come to pass as far as major network news and the way it's gone. And
I wondered if it was true that he said that, or if it was just, you know,
I don't think they would have.
Yeah, I don't think they falsified it. And some of the personal stuff they obviously they didn't know.
Whose personal stuff?
What Fred Friendly and how they negotiated. Fred Friendly and Murrow.
Murrow.
From what I read, everything that Murrow said that had to do with Pavlov was actually
from a trick.
His words.
Interesting. I wanted to see Haley's art collection. That's what I was thinking. But I actually thought the film was like, you know, I thought there's nothing here. You couldn't read it in a magazine or anything. Why, you know, I wondered if it's because it was the projectionist. So I saw it at Stonestown, and I think not going back there.
Mouse ran over my feet.
Oh my God.
And I wonder if it would have looked better had I seen it somewhere else.
It was a little scurry.
And I had to get up and come like,
once I wasn't.
Like, will you please look at the
line? Well, you know, at this showing at the Embarcadero, it sounded like there was a lot of static. And Steve thought maybe it was when McCarthy was speaking.
I noticed that too. I saw the Stone sound. But the sound quality was like, it just wasn't. The sound mixing just wasn't up to snuff.
Yeah, something was off.
I didn't know that.
We saw it in Menlo Park.
Except
I would agree with Mark.
Except for the music.
I didn't hear any
bumped up. Music was bumped up, but everything else, I don't know, was the ambient sound was too high or what, but it just wasn't up to snuff. So I felt like I should have had subtitles there for a while because I really couldn't hear it. But getting back to what Ellen was saying, that she didn't, I didn't think it was that great a film either, and I'm kind of upset because I think it has a real message and it reverberates today with the Patriot Act and everything else that's come down about, you know, being patriot or supporting the war, you know, and not being, you know, not being.
We wanted it to be more.
But I think one of the reasons why is because you never saw what that man was like. You always saw like what you could really see from the TV. You never really got to see where he was coming from. You never really saw him have a human moment.
Except which man? McCarthy?
No,
or Murrow?
Well, Murrow didn't, though. That's what I said walking up here with Mira. I thought the Murrow character was a little flat, deadpan, but he was that way.
Yeah, I think his...
I think the actor got it.
I remember him.
Yes,
I agree. He may have been that way.
The man had the voice now.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, but I just recall that was it. He was. And apparently, his in real life with his family, and he was pretty tight guy.
Yeah, taciturn. Could we say taciturn?
Yeah,
uptight.
You see, I was kind of relieved to not get all of the, you know, the personal stuff. I was so enthralled by the political stuff. But you see, I brought in my own prejudices.
You know, it's just like a small film on a big subject, and it just didn't cover enough.
Did everybody think when it ended, it felt like it stopped short?
Yeah,
I wanted it.
Yeah,
we're already back to that speech. I don't know. I wanted more.
So what happened to McCarthy?
It seemed to be like a lot of the subplots they didn't really follow up on. Like Patricia Clarkson is such a great actress.
She is.
Yeah.
And Donnie, I think, is a great actor.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of wasted.
Yeah, I agree.
And all the minor characters I thought were kind of wasted. Paley was excellent.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
perfect.
Yes.
Better than I thought Clooney, who I think I felt it took a little bit of a vanity piece to make himself right, frankly.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, that's his prerogative, and he had fun with it, but
And he sells tickets, but
yeah, and it does sell tickets. It's true. He really wanted to make this movie. Making any movie in black and white is very difficult, and selling it to the public. So maybe he did put himself in to sell tickets.
Are the public going to see this film?
George Clooney's in it. Let's go see that George Clooney film.
When I saw it, was absolutely packed.
It was packed the first couple of weeks.
Oh, really? It was packed the way out today.
It's a pretty good crowd room. We just saw it today, and it's been out for a while.
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
Tickets were sold out for several shows a day.
Yeah, people wouldn't leave. I've never seen it. It's like people stood in the aisles talking.
Really?
When I saw it. Yeah, at the Embarcadero. You see, I thought it ended abruptly, but I felt so hungry for more, and I felt it was because of the issues that were brought up in the movie. I was telling Mary, I have a feeling a lot of this movie was on the cutting room. It's one of those films that when it comes out on DVD, it will be full of all these filler scenes. Which probably actually might make it a better movie.
How would we feel if we're cut more like Red?
I never saw the dreaded Red.
Well, no, but I mean,
4 hours
with an intermission.
I don't mean the 4 hours, but I mean the hunger for more. I mean, I would like to meet those people and have whatever that conversation is at the
FBI. See a documentary on. There was a great documentary on McCarthy called Point of Order.
Oh yes, I know.
By Emile D'Antonio. It is fabulous, it's real, and I think it's better, but. Clooney wanted to reach a new...
Thank you.
I mean, I've been studying Edward R. Murrow since the 50s. You know, I love him. I'm not his audience.
Was that the only interaction between the two of them, that he presented this on a show one time and then McCarthy came back the one time and that was it?
I think so.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be a debate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be a big clash there, but no.
Keep moving those.
So what happened to McCarthy at the end? He just kind of faded out?
What was eventually
McCarthy? He was censured by the Senate,
but not kicked out.
Okay. Not kicked out, but then he got very ill and died.
He died also.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And he is to this day a disgrace to the state of Wisconsin. Yeah, well, to the world.
I mean, how many times have you heard
McCarthyism? Yeah,
on a senator from within the body?
Right.
Not so very often.
And certainly his name is in our vocabulary, which I think is interesting for younger people to see a little bit about that. But I think they don't really see that much about him.
Because that came from a choice, I think, that to see McCarthy only in real footage.
Oh, and that was smart. It would have been crazy to have an actor play McCarthy.
And but
I'm sure somebody like that was talked about.
Yeah, I had somebody else in mind.
Do you remember anything about his being elected, about the election campaign he ran, or anything
before,
like that?
No. He was elected probably in the late 40s.
Well, I don't know.
I was before my time.
Before my
consciousness. But I think the whole country, like, I mean, switched. People were for him, and people didn't instantly hate him. There was a lot of clout behind him, or the blacklist wouldn't have gone on as long as it did. This wasn't just this wasn't a 6 month thing. This was from the 40s, from the post war until, you know, the late 50s.
Right, but he was the expression of it that many other people had also.
Apparently, I once read that this actually happened in Canada too, that it was the blacklist. You know, it wasn't just here.
And he had a lot of powerful journalists backing him up, like Winchell.
Like Winchell, right.
They didn't show the whole Hearst thing too. They touched on the Hearst paper, because they were the ones who brought down the guy that committed suicide. But, and Murrow does say at one point, I can't take on Hearst, too. I'm taking on McCarthy.
Right.
You know? So that was, you know, they were nice little pieces.
Okay, so let's go back to the film, rather than history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got votes for somewhat disappointing or not enough to last, and votes for not enough content to get you to a good place of closure. Is that a good summary? What else about the film? And I like the film noir, and we talk about the black and white.
It was gorgeous.
It's all interior shot with no exterior.
That's right.
I wanted it to look better, and I thought, so I just wanted it to be a better film. I didn't think it looked that great, but I wondered if it was the projection.
I thought
the
film looked great.
From that first scene and that banquet, I thought it just was... All the dresses, the black and white, I just thought it was really good.
Caught
in all the smoking.
And the smoking, and the Vogue magazine. It's like they picked the pages out of Vogue and Harper's.
And
it was just
ball with us,
fabulous.
With the makeup, with the hair, with the body language of the women is so different. Mm-hmm. And the women who worked in the office.
And the different
Patricia Clarkson is the one female member of the team. A lot of it was fascinating.
Terry was talking earlier today about Paley's secretary. Weren't you saying that one?
Oh, no.
Who is she?
The older woman with those shoes, right?
She must have been in like... The whole Paley thing was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's because he's such a good actor or... he was really good. Because he's really the only person with some conflict. Merle is sort of set in what he's doing. Friendly is set in what he's doing. McCarthy's set in what he's doing. And Paley, has a lot more.
Does anybody know who the other woman was? Natalie, who was kind of like George Clooney's secretary.
I can't remember who it was.
She was kind of chubby, short.
Right.
The two women who came off the elevator.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen her in other things.
I can't remember her name.
Do you guys know about Internet Movie Database?
Of course. I'll go home. I was thinking of going home and checking
that one. There was another character in the film, Don Hewitt, which I couldn't figure out which one he was in the film. But who he is in real life, because he was the producer of 60 Minutes for years and years.
Oh, right, right.
Did anybody notice who he was? They mentioned his name, and I couldn't figure out which character he was.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to pick up.
I think I heard him referred to.
Yeah.
I knew who.
Yeah.
At some point, they did say who he was
in
the dialogue. But there was a really, really good documentary about production of News done about Don Hewitt about six years ago. I have a copy of it. It is really good. You know, and it talks about Palin. It talks about those early
years.
Oh,
interesting.
So,
Richard, so, Rudy, were you not living in the States?
No, I missed that whole area.
So, how did it strike you?
Well, it struck me as something very intense from the beginning that people had to be clued in before it arrived. And it was intense from the beginning to the end. It didn't build up for me. It was just, and then slowly I got into it. I know about McCarthy. I've read a lot about it, seen documentaries and lots of things. But I wasn't in the States starting in 1950. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a television.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I knew nothing then.
Mm-hmm. But if you had had,
had I been here, I would have watched it probably.
Mm-hmm. Everybody
else here had a TV, but I was in Mexico and we didn't. Right. There were televisions. We didn't.
Right, but then you weren't showing that. You know,
no.
You weren't showing that.
There
was some other stuff
in
Mexico, right?
No.
So even if you had a television, you weren't.
We didn't have a television at all. And I don't remember being. I know there was an atmosphere in my house of sort of tension about it. What I remember. I remember a lot more of my parents and my grandmother kind of paying close attention and really feeling, having all their feelings riveted by the Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, so that's sort of what I'm thinking. And the movie, to me, it was interesting. And I was sort of caught up in the era and how they depicted it and the black and white stuff, but I agree that it didn't seem to build very much. It sort of
it's something that was taken for granted that you knew everything.
Well, partly that's because of the framing story. See, by framing it with that speech, there was no tension about whether Murrow would, you know, be fired and be a nobody or whatever, because they start out that he's this icon that's being honored, and then they only go back 3 or 4 years. And I think that's part of why there wasn't any tension. I think if you had saved that speech for the end, it would be really different than framing it.
Why do you think they did that?
Because it really, and there also was intention, because we all know that McCarthy was brought down. Unless you're on a desert island, you can't.
Mm-hmm. But still, you could tell the story
with more
tension. Even though you know what the outcome's going to be, you could tell it in a way.
You don't know who would bring him down. And Murrow didn't bring him down. And at some point, they even said he's going to self-destruct by himself. And he probably would have. So, you know,
Welch brought him down. Whoever that guy was.
Yes. Who makes the statement?
Have you no sense of decency?
Oh, yeah.
Right, that's Welch. And that's
famous.
A movie about him.
That's like a famous phrase.
Yeah. So I felt that it sort of didn't have an arc. Yeah. It didn't have a strong dramatic arc.
Yeah.
Part of it was because of the framing story.
I agree. Also, the sense of time. It seemed I didn't get a good sense of time. How much time passed between the various key things within the film. So that left me sort of feeling a little bit just uncomfortable. Also, Jeff Daniels sort of popped in.
Like
who the hell was he? I'm not sure what he really played in. Mm-hmm. He popped in again, and what's going on here? So
he's really good.
William
the Whale. I've heard he's great in this.
Yeah.
I'm sure several of us
will
vote if we have
it all.
Sorry.
That wasn't the point.
So I like the movie. I definitely like the film, but I found it indeed lacking and flat and
it has lots of details.
Yeah.
It has lots of little details about posing, about the colors and the contrast and the art. That way I liked it a lot. I did like the black and white effects, everything.
You know what I didn't get from the film is that sense of that apparently, I don't remember this myself, but of that creeping and growing sense of fear that people have that if they could be named and you know, if you're a newspaper man, okay, you know, all the people we saw, they might lose their job, that's true, but I mean, they could probably go and work somewhere else, maybe. Mm-hmm. But
could be a school teacher.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. Not as a school teacher, a librarian, or a clerk, or something.
Job. No government.
And even writer, Hollywood screenwriters are getting blacklisted.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that level of fear.
Was the big deal about that couple that they were married? Is that it?
Because it made it seem like it was something red in their life.
That sort of made it seem like they were communists because they were having an affair. And it had that kind of flavor.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have put that in there. I mean, it just didn't apply.
Well, it's another thing about how repressive CBS was.
Or the time. There's plenty of other things you could put in a movie
that has the flavor of you're red, and that
you need to be afraid of who you are. Well, actually, they talk about that other guy. Suicide, gone to meetings or had whatever.
There was another guy whose ex-wife or something was involved.
Right.
That girlfriend. Yeah, something.
Right. Girlfriend.
It's like they picked that black woman as the example of one of his examples, and they could have picked a better example, it was to me, than that woman who got this promotion, and you never find out why she got a promotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's a real person.
But I just thought they could have picked a better example.
I thought it wasn't explained that well, or it wasn't. It didn't sort of.
The movie is only an hour and a half long, too.
I know, that's why it felt short. I think maybe he was afraid to make it long and
complicated.
Short attention. Like heavy duty. But see, it's like the movie, teaching people history.
The movie wasn't really so much. Seems to me, now that I'm thinking about it, about how, the McCarthy era and how it affected most, the common people. It was about the news people and how they chose to handle something they knew was going on, and et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. And I think he did that quite, Clooney was saying his father was a local news guy.
That's right.
And so I think that was, I think you're right.
Clooney or
Clooney's father.
There's so many parallels that they could have drawn out there and made it more explicit in terms of how the media can choose to go along with the current propaganda or the current paranoia. Or it can say, wait a second, I mean, when I was out of the country and there were drums of war, when I was on my sabbatical, I couldn't believe that people were going along with this, that Congress was going along with it, the media was going along with this. And when I came back, all the justification for war and all that stuff, I couldn't believe that people are going along with this in the media. I mean, they're supposed to be independent, investigative, and here they're just parroting, you could say that in this movie, you could say that the media has a right or has an obligation.
That's a speech and I'm standing in the end.
The speech says it, okay, and it's very profound.
And I think it's Clooney's but Clooney doesn't say that
in the action, in the drama, or the emotion of the film. And that's where you need to hit people. I don't care what words you put in somebody's mouth.
Can you imagine CBS now giving up sponsorship for a show?
You see,
can you imagine that? It's like, we'll go without sponsors when Alcoa drops out.
You see, I thought it made that point. I thought that everything, all the whole thing that went on between him and McCarthy, and then with that little video of Eisenhower at the end talking about habeas corpus and that, I thought that the movie really made a really strong point that there was a time when the media would criticize politicians in a very strong voice as opposed to now. I thought that he allowed us to make that leap. And I think you were looking for it.
I was looking for it, and I didn't see it.
Well, I think you were also better prepared than most people.
Yeah. If it's of importance.
And I agree with you. I think it just... It was like a really good idea, but it was a little bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
yeah.
It did feel a bit like a misfire. Unless you already were interested. But maybe like young broadcasting students and whatever, they'll get it because they already heard of Murrow.
I don't mean it was like a... I wouldn't say a total misfire, but it was just not quite there. It could have been better. It wasn't quite good enough. I think everybody seems to think that.
Mira, the only 100%.
No, I'm not 100%. Oh, come on, Mira, be honest.
I'm not 100%, but I seem to have liked it a lot more than other people do. I think you did make that statement, though, Mark, because they go through that whole thing. We're not supposed to make the news. We're supposed to, you know, they talk about that whole thing. That was a really important thing.
I'm just saying that it didn't connect it with today's world. It made that statement, but it totally missed connecting it with what's going on today.
How could they say that overtly without being really...
I think there's ways you could do it.
I thought that you were there.
No, I didn't mean that, but I think there's ways you can do it, and maybe I'll have to think about it and think about, you know, some episode or some dialogue that could have been brought up to say that, to make it the parallels obvious. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It missed that mark for me.
Yeah.
And I was looking for that mark.
I kind of see that. Yeah. It missed something for me, but I'm not sure what. Okay.
Let's forget that. From the money they lost from the sponsors out of their own pockets.
Well, we don't know if they really did that.
Well,
that was kind of a
gesture or whatever.
Yeah.
But we don't know if they did. I thought everything was true.
Well, no, but I mean, they say we'll pay.
How much is it?
$3,000. We'll pay. We don't know if they really did, or if Haley just sort of said, "Well, without sponsorship."
Another movie that addressed the independence of the news media that I thought perhaps did make the connection better was The Insider.
I don't remember seeing it.
Al Pacino and
I think that did a better job.
Russell Crowe, about the fabulous film.
Oh, that one. Okay, yeah. Right.
That was really good.
I remember hearing everything about it, but I don't think I actually ever saw it.
That was much more brief.
Did anybody see the film that starred the star? I don't know the actor's name in Fargo. What's the
Macy
film having to do with the McCarthy era?
No, what was it?
It came out about 2 years ago.
Yes,
it flew by really fast, but it looked interesting. He and his wife are mistaken for being Jewish or something like that. They're in a small town, but it had a McCarthy kind of overtone to it.
I don't even know that I heard about that.
I think I saw it even. I think it was okay. What I'm saying is this. There's another way to tackle that whole era in terms of paranoia, you know, looking over your shoulder, not only looking at your shoulder at somebody who might report you as a communist, but also, you know, the fifth column. Where's the fifth? You know, people were thinking that the communists are infiltrating, and so there was two sides of that coin.
Right, and that's interesting.
And in everyday life, not in the media. This is about.
It's clear to us in retrospect that McCarthy was, you know, this evil person, but it wasn't so clear at the time, especially when he started out. It was not so clear, and it's nice when films can show that ambivalence. But that sort of wasn't this film. It wasn't about
I agree. But I was just thinking that would be nice to see that. I want to see that film.
By the way, I would recommend seeing The Front again if anybody hasn't
seen it. I saw it at the Jewish Film Festival.
Yeah, it actually was way better than I had remembered.
It's not a Woody Allen. He's in it.
He stars as the guy who fronts for all the blacklist films.
And apparently that's how they were able to get it made.
Yes, and it's all, and when the credits run, it's very, they're all blacklisted. The director and everybody was blacklisted.
Zero Mostel.
Zero Mostel was blacklisted.
it was quite powerful. I showed it at the time. It was like a lesser Woody Allen because it wasn't, you know. But I showed it to my students because we talk about the Blacklist, of course, the Hollywood 10 in my film history. And I ended up showing the front. And I think they learned something from it. I think it was educational. And I don't know that I'd show this film because I think it just didn't give. And that did make you look over. It was the people looking over their shoulder and trying to come to terms with it. It was, I think it was more nuanced in a way.
When they go off to the country and he can't, he's screwed on his face. It's the neighborhood where I grew up. Those hotels, that's where I grew up.
Oh, in the Catskills?
Catskills?
Oh, really? That was a great scene. Anyway, it's a good film. It's really worth renting in the front. Very interesting.
Okay, good.
I don't know if it's called. In Point of Order is the documentary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I remember
that.
That's
a great documentary. That I haven't seen that.
Excellent. I remember seeing it as an undergraduate, and then I saw it again later. Yeah.
Only we have documentary makers like that.
I think it'd be worthwhile to see Harvest of Shame and Marvelous documentary.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that
but years ago. I saw it when I was in graduate school.
Harvest of Shame is one of the...
Is that a documentary?
No, it's one of the one-hour things that he did about the migrant...
It's a documentary that Edward R. Murrow did.
Oh, Murrow.
And so you can rent some of Murrow's work. Yeah, his CBS reports. And it's amazing that these things were on network TV. I mean, it's just amazing, like you say, that people had such a strong opinion.
Okay, and you don't see anything like that anymore.
No, they came out against segregation, and they in the NBC. Yeah, it's
even the national news broadcasts have practically no news.
I have to comment on one piece that we haven't talked about from Good Night and Good Luck, and that is how they made him. You know, that he had to pay back by doing these celebrity interviews.
I remember those very well.
And the one was with LeBaron.
When are you getting married?
So Lee, tell us, are you, you've been single? You live with your mother? When are you going to get married? Thinking about getting married? And he gave the greatest answer, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's just
that I'm waiting for the perfect woman.
Yeah. No, he didn't say woman. He says, I want my soulmate. I'm looking for my soulmate.
And he found his soulmate.
Who? He didn't?
Well,
he compared himself to Princess Margaret, remember?
Yeah, like Princess Margaret. So that was inspired to put that in. But those person-to-persons, I remember those very well. We watched those all the time. And he did like Zsa Zsa Gabor. And, you know, I mean, it was... He hated doing those. I mean, now in retrospect, so I thought that was interesting. If you're a Murrow person, it was an interesting film. You're a Murrow person. I'm a Murrow person.
So, did the real Murrow look like the guy in this movie?
Yeah, he had body language down. He had the
He
worked at it.
Look something like that.
Yeah. I suppose Harvest is saying he can is out on.
I would think it would be now.
I think I'll get Lavideo.
I've seen it. I'm just saying, if you want to know what Marlon looks like, that's...
I bet Netflix has them, too.
Mm-hmm.
So movie actors always, even when they're character actors, they seem to always have somehow smoother, more even features.
Yeah,
than, like... The real Murrow was like a little bigger in the forehead. The hair was a little darker, less unruly.
How much of the physical look do you go for? How much of the voice do you go for?
You want to start?
How much
again?
Hold on.
Okay.